We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Ron Coomer, Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
Unbelievable.
1999 American League All-Star.
You might expect Wells to mix his pattern up. I mean, Coomer has owned David Wells.
This might work out.
The Coom Dog, every week with Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my goodness gracious, what a joy to talk to Ron Coomer. And he joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Mikey. David, how are you boys doing today?
Oh, we're having a lot of fun. It's fun to talk baseball, and it's fun to, like, panic every once in a while about baseball, isn't it? It's just great to have it on.
It beats the heck out of what we did a month and a half ago, isn't it?
Without a doubt.
That, I was listening. You're arguing about Aloy. Okay, great. We're just arguing about something that actually happened. It's good.
No kidding. How nice to have a debate over something on the field rather than something right? In a boardroom, right?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. I'm with you guys 100%.
So, St. Louis, meet me in St. Louis. Seems like a little bit of a concern just playing a team. Number one, they've been off a long time, and they've been off for a very negative reason. And, you know, you look at these teams and you look around baseball. A week ago, we were afraid we wouldn't be able to reconvene on Monday talking baseball because of what happened with the Marlins. And now I believe every team will be in play today or tonight. And that's a great relief, but clearly we have a new sense of urgency around baseball.
Yeah, there's, you know, I got a feeling this is going to be an ongoing thing, Mike. You know, this virus isn't going away. We all know that. And everybody's at risk every day. When you step out of your house, you're at risk. And I think the guys, I can speak for the Cubs in talking with David. The Cubs have done a great job. One little thing or one, you know, mishap, and next thing you know, you got half your ball club has the virus, and it's a scary thing. But Pat and I were talking yesterday. We just want the games to continue and us to finish out the season no matter what happens, right? So it is. It's, you know, we were teetering there. I thought one more team with a major outbreak, and I think they would have pulled the plug at least for a few weeks. And if you pull the plug for 2 weeks, how do you get back to where you need to be? So we're fortunate that we're able to keep going, and let's just hope everybody can stay playing. That's to me the biggest thing.
And these trends early would be so much fun, Coom, if they continue, because I would love to see you squirming with the Cubs Twins World Series. That would be a lot of fun to see you work both sides of that equation. And when you talk about playoff contenders, I mean, you talk about the viability of teams kind of maintaining how they started. How much faith do you have in the Cubs bullpen with all its maneuvering that they can be a consistent unit by the end of this season?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if I said, oh, I'm rock solid with them, I'd be lying. You know, David, they've had their issues and they're very young, so it is what it is. And Kimbrel, even last night, you know, looks like his fastball is just flat to me. It's got great life velocity wise, and it's, you know, but he throws from such side that he just doesn't get any downward tilt to it. And I think hitters see it real well from his arm angle. So I think they've got a lot of work to do with the bullpen. They really do. You know, you're going to get Q back. So does that mean somebody goes down to the pen to help? Does Q go to the pen at the beginning? Does that help? You know, is he going to be, you know, really good? Is he going to be a guy that's still trying to figure it out when he's available? I don't know. The bullpen is a big issue for the Cubs. They do have some talented young guys down there. Wick can throw. Ryan can throw. I think Jeffress definitely gives you presence. But you gotta have some other guys step up. And you really, really need Kimbrel to figure it out to where he can be at least part of the bullpen. You know, yesterday he threw a mop up and, you know, he got hit around again yesterday. So it's a concern, there's no doubt. But there's also a lot of positive to this team, too.
I got to tell you, I'm very excited at the idea of Q coming back and having a big decision to make. I'm really hoping that everybody is up and running and healthy, because I think David Ross has maybe been better than advertised, if that's possible, because he was advertised pretty highly, and I'm dying to see what he does in that decision.
It's going to be a tough one. I don't know. Well, let me say this. Who do you take out of the rotation? I mean, you know, so three guys have had one bad start out of three. But so Darvish, you're not going to take him out of the rotation. We know that. Kyle Hendricks isn't going out of the rotation. We know that. And so yesterday, Chatwood had a tough start. But he had two where, you know, the start before that, he punched out 11 in 6 2/3 and nobody touched the ball. So I don't know what you do. To me, Mills has been lights out, and he's a young guy, and you're going to have him for a while. How do you take him out of the rotation? He's been really good, and, you know, he doesn't have a heartbeat, so, you know, he doesn't get excited. So it's going to be a tough decision. You know, there's a couple guys. You definitely need help, so that you've got to do something. And do you make that cue, or do you make that one of the guys like a Chatty or someone else?
Ron, given your experience around the Cubs and as a major league player, as long as you were in the clubhouse, what did you think of the way that David Ross handled the situation with Javi Baez the other night when Javi didn't run as hard as he could have out of the box and settled for a single instead of a double?
Yeah, I don't even think he really addressed it, is kind of what I read. Is that what you're insinuating, Dave, where he just didn't make a deal of it, right?
Well, at least publicly he did not. I wonder if privately he did.
No, I bet he didn't. I would say he did not. Here's a take on that. Every now and then things happen in a ball game that don't look good. They just do. And I don't believe that Javi does things maliciously to dog it or belittle the game or just not play the game the right way. So I think there are times where you just go, you know, sometimes not saying anything is way better than overblowing a situation. Because for right now, that situation for the team has gone away. It's gone. No big deal. If he were to make a big deal of it, it still has a presence in your clubhouse. I would say this. If that became an issue with Javi not running balls out, then you've got to say something, because you can't have the other guys all running hard and playing hard and then one guy not. But I don't think any of us could say Javi doesn't play hard or, you know, he doesn't play the game the right way. I don't see that part. It did look bad, though, I will say that. But he did have an answer for it. I as much as I didn't like to see that either, or none of us do, he said, I thought the ball was foul and I didn't see it right away. Well, okay, that's at least it's an answer. And sometimes I really believe the one thing you got to remember, this isn't Little League. This is grown men playing. And sometimes you just got to let things go and say, you know what? That was ugly. I'm letting this go. I'm not going to say anything, because saying something has more of a negative effect on the whole ball club and one of my star players than just letting it go.
I wonder, you know, as much as we, listen to what he's saying about you know, you don't want to be kind of tinkering with every little thing at all times. I would imagine that there's a difference between what you say publicly and what you do privately. And there is a possibility that there may have been a very short conversation, a sentence spoken either way. But I have a hard time imagining that he just lets things go without, you know, that's how you create issues and problems, by kind of neglecting little things. I think it's important to stay on top of them for most managers.
I don't disagree with that, Mike, but here's another thing that could happen very easily. David doesn't have to say anything. Do you think Javi's going to walk past Anthony Rizzo and Tony not look at him like, what the hell was that? And give you that look or that feeling like, dude, we don't play like that. Let's go. And that could be enough. You know, that you know, so there's a lot of ways that things can get handled in a clubhouse and in a dugout that don't need to be said openly. You know, nobody went to Anthony and said anything, you know, that I read. So you just never know. Who was the guy? I just knew years ago with the Minnesota Twins, since David brought up my old ball club, Justin Morneau was that guy. Somebody didn't run a ball out, and they would come in, and the old hockey player would meet him right at the bottom of the stair and be like, sorry, either you run the ball out, you and I got a problem if you don't, or just go in the clubhouse, and we'll find someone else to play. And he was the first baseman. He wasn't the manager. And Gardy just would look down from the end of the bench and just smile and go, I guess I don't have to say anything about that. That's kind of covered. And that's, so things get handled that way sometimes in a big league clubhouse.
Mully's a big Morneau guy.
He's really big. That guy. That guy caused nothing but bad problems for me in my life. And then they brought him in for a year and gave him money. Are you kidding
me? Thanks, Coom. Thanks for triggering
him. Maybe next week I'll call Morney and I'll have him join me with you guys.
Morneau! That was from years ago. Yeah.
Before we let you go, Coom, you look at the Cubs lineup, and we've talked a lot about how the bottom of the order has been so good this early. I wonder, how much do you attach that to just guys getting off to good starts, but also the presence of the DH? And I know that may seem obvious, but the way that the DH has allowed the Cubs to lengthen their lineup, the 7, 8, 9 spots have been really productive, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence. What it does for the Chicago Cubs is it allows you to have another good hitter in your lineup every day, and I know that sounds very obvious, but for the Cubs, that's Victor Caratini, right? He's been the guy that's mainly DH. To me, what that does for the Cubs is it gives them another bat that is a contact hitter, right? He's a guy that moves the ball around. When he's left-handed, you pitch him away, he's going to shoot it down the left field line. You pitch him in, he can hook the ball on the right field line. He can reach the seats once in a while, although he's not a home run hitter. You've got him. You've got Kipnis, you've got Horner, you've got guys that are contact guys that I think are vital for a good team, for a team to win. You can't have a bunch of boppers in your lineup and think that works. You've got to have guys that spray the ball around, hit away from the shifts, and understand how to move the baseball in situational hit. And I think with the DH and Kyle playing left field, it allows another really quality hitter who nobody really, the people that watch every day and really understand hitting, knew Caratini can hit. But now you're seeing it that, you know, this guy has good at-bats over and over and over left-handed. And it just gives the Cubs one more of those contact guys that just puts the ball in play and hits the ball on the barrel a lot. And to me, that's it. You've got a second base position that both guys have gotten off to a hot start. You got a center fielder this year who's hit some balls in the seats and is having much better at-bats than he's had in years past than Hap. And Victor has really stepped up. The second base position has been unbelievable for the Cubs with Kipnis and Horner. How fun is that to see from last year, you know, where the Cubs were struggling to try to get offense from there?
Great stuff, Ron. Thanks a ton. We appreciate it. As always, great talking to you.
Boys, thanks, Coom. Don't fight anymore. Eloy will be fine in the outfield. It's okay. Happy Friday. Enjoy your coffee. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Miss
All right, buddy. Coom. God bless you. That's Rod Coomer. Yeah. All I heard there at the end is him agreeing with me.
I know. But okay, he also brought up Morneau. All right, so
Morneau. Yeah, there you go.
Before you give That's him a hug, one. Remember that.
We're going to bring in Tracy Myers next. We're going to get you ready for the Blackhawks. It's an early late afternoon start. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Obviously, hard-fought game from us. I thought we showed a lot of character to stick with it. You know, I thought we were pretty solid defensively, did a good job of limiting their transition, and we found a way to score some dirty goals. A lot of people going in the net, getting traffic, and like I said, proud of how the guys worked, and we'll enjoy it for tonight and then on to the next one.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And that is the voice of Jeremy Colliton and the Blackhawks with a chance to eliminate the Edmonton Oilers late this afternoon. We're delighted to welcome in Tracy Myers of NHL.com. Tracy, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing okay. We should say you're joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And, you know, Tracy, it's been a lot of fun in Chicago because, in part, I think that the Edmonton goalies have been cooperating. Certainly, they made an error, no question, starting Mike Smith. And Mikko Koskinen had a chance to close that game down and couldn't make the big save when it mattered most late in Game 3. And I think that everybody is kind of – it's transportive here because we remember how good these guys were. You see Taze credited with the goal at the end there, and it's a game-winning goal for Jonathan Taze. It's a flashback to days of glory, and I know it's a completely different team, but the edge going in for the Blackhawks seemed to be at goalie. And lo and behold, Corey Crawford, I know the numbers might not back it up entirely, but he's been significantly better, and they've gotten some great outings from him.
I think he's been fine. I think there have definitely been times where you've seen the fact that he only got about a week of practices in. You know, there have been times now. Granted, pretty much every Connor McDavid goal that's gone up against him, that's just Connor McDavid being McDavid. But no, for the lack of time that Crawford got on the ice after having to be quarantined and not really being able to do anything, he's been able to get the Blackhawks on the brink here.
So, Tracy, it has been a tale of two scorers for the Oilers. I mean, when you talk about McDavid and Draisaitl, beyond them, they haven't had a ton. With the Blackhawks, yeah, I feel like they've gotten support from their secondary scores, which is what they need. Everybody understands the value of Jonathan Taze, and everybody respects mm-hmm. what Corey Crawford has done. But tonight, how do you think and who do you think might be the person to emerge if it is among the Blackhawks' top six and they need somebody to come through? Who would that be?
Yeah, I'd like to see Dominic Kubalik do something again. You know, just as far as after that game that he had, game one with 5 points, becoming the first player in NHL history to do that in a playoff debut. That was impressive. So I won't be surprised if you see something from him. You know, Kirby Dach just keeps bringing that confidence. I mean, you can just see it building with game after game. You still see that hesitancy with him sometimes. If taking a shot and everything like that. And once he gets past that, he's going to be something. But you just see that strength that he has and a little bit more speed. And as Colliton was saying, he's a little bit older now, and he got that rest. You know, for a 19-year-old to take on a long season like that, that's not easy. So I really like the way that he's progressed. So those two guys, I wouldn't be surprised if you see something from them.
You know, we saw the Blackhawks get a ton of power play chances in Game 3 and not take advantage of it in the way you'd hope. I think they were one of six. And mm-hmm. we also saw them hit the iron like 5 times in that game, which is why they had to come from behind in the third period to win it. Obviously, these penalties seem to come in bunches. How important is it? We talked about it before the series started, to just make sure you don't let the NHL's best power play get going, to stay out of the penalty box.
Yeah, and this has been an issue. You know, I've basically been watching pretty much every game since it started Saturday. I mean, my TV, I just told somebody, has been on one game or another. It's kind of been a league-wide thing with a lot of these teams. You know, a lot of the stick infractions, the trying to catch up, you know, how much of that is conducive to just having a short training camp and recovering, getting back into game shape after 4 months. But, yeah, for the Blackhawks, my God, you got to be careful because, you know, with the last game, with as many penalties as Edmonton took, you took their biggest weapon off the ice for quite a while in Connor McDavid. And to do the exact opposite, you see what the guy can do. You see what that power play can do. It's pretty impressive how they move the puck around and they're in the right position and they get opportunity after opportunity. So I can see why that power play was number one during the regular season. And the Blackhawks just have to be careful and make sure you're catching up and make sure you're not taking especially those lazy penalties, those I can't quite get there, hold the player, grab the stick, hook them, all those things that just drive coaches bonkers. But yeah, you keep the Edmonton power play off the ice, you're giving yourself a much better chance. There's no doubt.
Tracy, I'm not sure what's at stake for the Oilers. They have a young core and they have some great players. I don't really care about the Oilers, but I look at the Blackhawks and I do wonder what's at stake in this postseason for them. And I wonder, you don't want to get too far ahead and you don't want to say that they are advancing before they actually advance. But if they're able to win this series, what does it mean in terms of their – what does it reinforce to Stan Bowman or to Danny Wirtz, to a franchise that was, you know, in transition at the beginning of this pandemic? And now if they win a playoff series, it means what?
Well, it means that they at least took the first step in taking advantage of an opportunity that was given to them because of an extraordinary situation. You know, we've all said it throughout, you know, the last month or two, nobody saw any of this coming, be it the hockey world, be it the world in general with the pandemic and what it's brought upon us. And, you know, Patrick Kane talked about it. He's like, we're here. We've got an opportunity that we wouldn't have seen likely at the end of March. And the Blackhawks, at the rate they were going at the end of March, were not making the playoffs. That's all there was to it. So if they're able to advance, and who knows what happens afterward, you know, it's at least giving themselves a chance. And they still have enough guys on this team who know what they can do if given that chance. Like you said, the Jonathan Taves, the Patrick Kanes, Duncan Keith, Corey Crawfords, Brandon Saad. So it's a chance. And once you get in there, who the heck knows what's happened? We've seen it year after year. Just get in and see what can go from there. And they're putting themselves in a position where they could possibly do that.
I was talking to a friend of mine, big hockey guy, and I was asking him, you know, Joel Quenneville would go to the nuclear option and put Kane and Taze together if you're in kind of this elimination situation. Is there a chance that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl will be paired more? And my buddy said, not a chance, because McDavid is more of a guy. It's just he's just like this entity of his own, and he plays better with faster guys rather than skilled guys because he's just operating at a different speed. Do you agree with that, or do you think that they'll see more ice time together?
I think that you can tell that Dave Tippett and Joel Quenneville were teammates, you know, and good friends, that, especially back in the Hartford days, because, yeah, they like to keep their top two guys apart if they can, because it's just a stronger way of doing things. You know, like, you know, with Kane, he can play with anybody, of course, and Taves, you know, if you put them together, usually good things happen, but if you could keep them apart and make it tougher on the opponent, that was the way they like to do it. And Dave Tippett does it the same way. And I would kind of agree. I know it's one of those things that, yeah, is it time to press the button? I wouldn't think, at least at the start of the game tonight, I don't expect to see it. Now, of course, you have to take the game from there. You know, what happens? Is Edmonton up late or are they down a goal? You know, then do you go to it? I don't expect it off the start because, like you said, Connor McDavid can just do so much magic on his own. You give him a guy like Nugent Hopkins and off they go. But, yeah, I'm curious to see, you know, what's happening as we go into the third period and what happens there.
You know, Tracy, I don't think anybody's going to look at this series and think it's a defensive clinic. And yet I look at the Blackhawks blue line and I think that had low expectations coming in, but you look at the contributions from Cuckoo, you look at Connor Murphy, I think has been a pretty responsible defenseman. You look at, you know, Mata has been up and down, but he's had some ups that have stood out, and obviously there's Keith and Boqvist. Overall, I think that the Hawks have to be somewhat pleased, even though it's not been a clinic, but their defensemen have been better, I think, than maybe they expected.
They've been solid, and I remember talking to Eddie Olczyk before everything got going, talking to him and Sean Horkoff about what was going to be the big difference in this series, and they both pointed to the defense because it wasn't the strongest suit for either of these teams. And I would agree with that. You know, especially with Mata, there have been times where you've just kind of covered your eyes, and you know he's been victimized by Connor McDavid a time or two. Again, he's got plenty of company there. But then he comes up with the big shot that somebody deflects, or he gets the goal himself, and you need that. You need guys to contribute on both sides, and it goes back to the secondary scoring that we were talking about earlier. You know, on the Edmonton side, I know Dave Tippett, especially in Game 1, was not happy with Klefbom and Larson, and said so. And now they're missing Larson. Who knows if he plays tonight? But you needed your defense to be solid. You needed to help out your goaltending some. And I think on both sides of the puck so far, they've done a good enough job for that.
Do we know who's unfit to play? I mean, that drives me nuts, that term. But Adam Larson missed the last game. He could still be out. Who got hurt? Someone got hurt.
Tyler Ennis is out indefinitely. So, yeah, okay. He's out for today. But, yeah, I mean, Larson – Caleb Jones came in for him the other day, brother of Seth Jones. So good genes there in terms of defensemen. And he was fine. So we'll find out about Larson. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up playing tonight. But the Oilers will definitely miss Ennis, who's just this versatile veteran that they could put at center. They could put him at wing. Tippett said he was a very smart player and that skilled players love to play with him because of his intelligence on the ice and his ability to see plays and know when to hold the puck, when to give it up, all that. So they will definitely miss Tyler Ennis.
Oh, that's a loss. Yeah, that's a big loss for the Oilers. Do you think that was a clean hit, Tracy? Because that was a source of debate afterward. But Kirby Dach, I feel like, did what he could. It didn't look like a dirty hit, but I could understand why some people might see it that way.
Yeah, I understand, with the Oilers, their angst on it because Kaylor Yamamoto had done the same thing to, I think it was Connor Murphy earlier in the game and got penalized. So I think that was their issue with that. I mean, the injury itself was just the fluke part of that. You know, I don't think it was the hit itself that caused the injury. It was just one of those things where the way his leg got tangled up, it was just incredibly unfortunate. But, yeah, the Oilers, I think, were unhappy with the fact that their guy got a penalty on a hit that certainly looked similar and that Kirby Dach didn't. But in terms of dirty, you know, it's hard for me to put that on Dach.
Tracy, who do you like in the series here moving forward, and will it end tonight?
It's a hunch that I have that the Blackhawks are going to wrap it up tonight. It's just, again, who knows? I used to be really good at my hunches, and they've been terrible the last 2 years, so take that for what it is. But you guys can probably understand this, there's still enough elements of this team from 13, from 14, from 15, you know, again, Taves, Kane, these guys who just know when they've got this opportunity, you got to jump on it and you got to take advantage of it. And they will instill that into, you know, the guys who haven't been here before, be it the young guys, be it the guys who just haven't been in the playoffs. So yeah, they've just got enough guys on this team who know, all right, you know, it's time to shut her down. It's difficult, but we can pull this off. So I will not be surprised if it ends tonight.
Great stuff, Tracy. Thanks a ton. Really appreciate your time.
Good talking to you, Tracy. Thank you.
You guys too. Thank you.
That is Tracy Myers, NHL.com, was a beat writer here for years and does a great job. Really fun to talk to her about that.
She really does, exciting. And I have the same hunch, Molly. I have the same hunch, Hawks tonight. I do, I think, maybe. Yes?
That's a lot of confidence. 312-644. 67-67. It's Molly and Haw on the score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. All right, we got a huge weekend in sports, a big weekend in baseball. It's Cubs-Cardinals. Is it really Cubs-Cardinals? I guess it's Cubs-Cardinals.
No.
Adam Wainwright's calling from New York. Oh, that's Sam Wainwright. Never mind.
it doesn't feel right.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't.
No.
You know, these are the 4A Cardinals. I know they may give the Cubs all they can handle, but I feel like this is a team that has played eight games fewer than the Cubs. They've played five times, and they haven't played in 9 days, and it feels very exhibition-y that they are going to be on the field, and the Cubs have every advantage going into St. Louis. I know the Cardinals are well-rested, but that is part of the problem as well as the benefit, is that they're too well-rested and probably rusty. I don't know. This feels weird.
It does feel weird. What about the Indian series for the White Sox? This is a big series for them. They need to get back on the winning track after dropping two in a row to Milwaukee. Things so promising the way they were ahead of Milwaukee. And then, of course, next week they travel to Detroit.
Well, this is a big one for the White Sox, I believe, because the Indians are legit. And I'm looking forward to Dylan Cease tonight to continue to kind of show the progress he showed in his last outing. Tomorrow is tomorrow scares me. I frankly, of the three games, Zach Plesac for the Indians. He's actually, Molly's also, he's going to be on Mack and Parkins today at 5 o'clock, the Ball State and Crown Point graduate. Yeah, he's going to be.
How did Mack get him over you? That is really disappointing.
I may join him too. Who knows? That'd be fun to interview a former Ball State athlete.
Yeah, there you go.
Chirp, chirp.
Not a whole lot of major leaguers, longtime major leaguers from Ball State in Muncie.
Just stop it, Jason. Stop it. So, but Sunday is the marquee matchup, Mully, and I think Shane Bieber, who has been as dominant of a pitcher as baseball has seen so far this season, and Lucas Giolito, who, you know, is a Sox ace. That's going to be fun. That's going to be a lot of fun out there. And this is a big series for the White Sox. I think they take two out of three.
Boy, I hope you're right. The PGA Championship, did that get your attention at all? The PGA Championship at TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, and we should tell you the PGA is back, and PGA coverage on the Score brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And I would love to enjoy a couple of Michelob Ultras sitting in front of the PGA this weekend. I got to tell you, Tiger, what did he shoot, a 68? I mean, everybody's shooting low, don't get me wrong. So, but just the idea that Tiger is in the mix is exciting. I can't wait to see what happens to the bag of one Bryson DeChambeau. Did you see that yesterday? He snapped his driver.
Yes, I saw that.
Hole.
Yeah.
What? How have you ever seen that happen where you hit so the thing broke and the ball went 340 yards.
It made me think of Sammy Sosa breaking his bat and the cork falling out. Ooh. It almost was like the biggest tell. It was like, oh my gosh, he's so strong, unnaturally so maybe, that he's breaking his driver. No, that's not fair. But that is the kind of, you know, that's the story around him coming into this tournament. And
Sosa comparison?
No.
That's just kind of the story. The guy's put on 50 pounds of muscle, and his trainer came out this week amid all the speculation, if you know what I'm saying, and he said, oh, no. He didn't put on 50 pounds in the last few months. It's, you know, his body was getting ready for 2 years to have this massive gain of muscle. And everybody went, yes, okay.
I guess that's probably why I was thinking of Sammy Sosa. That, yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah, it was a bit bizarre. I watched a passing glance yesterday. I was also kind of triggered and excited about Tiger being in the mix. I probably watched not long enough. I couldn't have finished a Michelob Ultra in the time that I watched yesterday. But I might tune in a little bit this weekend just to see who's in it on Sunday. Wonder if Jason Day is going to stay in the mix or where Koepka is going to be. There are a lot of names at the top of the first major, and that's a lot of fun. But I will spend most of the weekend watching Well, hockey, perhaps. Yeah. I hope it's just a one-time thing tonight, because if they lose, then game five is tomorrow on the back-to-back, Mully. But I think baseball will dominate the weekend, I hope.
We don't know when tomorrow would be, right? It's TB determined?
Yeah, I hope it's not like 9:30, or it doesn't really matter. But although it might be, because if they play tonight and they have to go back-to-back, they would probably drop the puck as late as possible, wouldn't you think?
I would imagine they try to give them a little bit of a break physically, but we'll see what happens. It's amazing, because you got to go, as you say, back-to-back. If you can't shut it out tonight, then you got to come back for the elimination game for both teams. And, man, I don't even know if we can do a show on Monday under certain circumstances. It might be pretty dark for one David Hall.
Yeah, I really don't relish coming in Monday and having the Hawks lose two in a row and their season being over, and having to talk about what is next for a team that kind of built our hopes up, and then they crushed them by losing two straight to the Oilers. Look, if they come back-to-back, Mully, here's what I would be concerned about. I know everyone says on paper the Hawks are the youngest team in the playoffs, but I don't think a back-to-back favors a 37-year-old defenseman or a goaltender who's coming off of fighting COVID, or two stars who are in their 30s now. I think that would scare me. So I think they need to wrap it up tonight.
So what if the Hawks lose and Zach Plesac gets shelled, David? Will you be calling off on Monday?
I think Zach Zaidman may be the guy that you would want to call in from the bullpen, because I will need a day to decompress.
Oh,
I'll be here. I'll be here no matter what. No matter what happens, Kevbo, that's a good question. My state of mind I cannot speak for, but I will be there in physically.
You're a gamer. There's nothing that would scare you off. I do think, though, get this done tonight. Let's not see what happens in a game five. Let's just get it closed out. And you know, two words, my friend, net presence. You know, we talked about Kirby Dach and what he's been able to do. That's a big, strong kid. He's come back even stronger. He's going to be a really good player before all is said and done in his NHL career, because we saw during the break he seemed to come back and put on more muscle. He's a young guy that's growing. It's not like during the break Bryson DeChambeau put on 20 pounds. This is totally different. This is just a young guy that is still growing and into a man, and he does get pushed around a little. But you saw what net presence does. The captain knows the game, wins a faceoff, gets in front of goal, and gets credited for Connor Murphy's fantastic goal there that Ethan slotted in.
Great comment. Okay, lousy rationale there, so just leave him alone. Stop killing the narrative. But it's a great comment, because you're exactly right. That's what happens, whether it's 5-on-5 or whether it's in the power play situation. How did the Hawks win that game? Taze wins a faceoff. He goes directly in front of the net. The shot is there, and regardless of how it ended up, the reason it ended up in the back of the net was because of the traffic in front of the net, because of the commotion that was created. That's the way you create a net presence, and that's how you fix your power play. Don't stand out there. And I think sometimes the Hawks get too fancy, and they're too cute, and they're too clever in the power play. Just shoot the puck, get in front of the net, be physical, be in front, and score.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. It sounds as very complicated. Get out early, you know, grind away, and get this thing done. I've got a lot more faith in Corey Crawford if the Hawks can get a lead late than I would in anybody connected to Edmonton. I think it's been an advantage coming into the series, and hopefully it'll be one that carries them through this final game.
And a key point tonight, Mully, you did not have to ask me about the condition of the ice, because it will be a 5:45 puck drop, and the ice should be in pristine condition.
I don't have to go talk about old trade schools and Zamboni and the whole bit?
No, I like that story. I want you to tell more of those. I think that was fun. I was getting misty-eyed.
Oh, God bless you. David, have yourself a phenomenal weekend.
You too, Mully.
We want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Means a lot to us. Thanks to our guy, Dustin Rhodes.
Shifting production to Thailand.
I wasn't expecting that. Our thanks to Kevin Zipak.
you know, he doesn't have a heartbeat.
And Ray, God, Ray Diaz, one of God's great men. Thank you,
thanks,
sir,
Ray,
for everything.
He made that crap up.
Jason Benetti will be on with Dan at 10 o'clock. Make sure that you are tuned in. They're old chums, and they'll have a lot to talk about. David, again, may all your teams win this weekend.
Yep, have a great weekend. You too.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.